Marijuana becoming legal for recreational use in both of our states resulted in some big changes, especially in the acreage dedicated to growing cannabis for sale. But even with the broad fields in the country, there are still grows set up illegally on public land around the region, and the campaign known as CROP is taking it on in California. CROP is cannabis removal on public lands. It features participation from a number of groups. Let's hear more about it and its goals. Two guests in the studio with me. Rich McIntyre is the CROP Project Director. He comes from the Community Governance Partnership in California. Rich, thanks for joining us on The Exchange.
Pleasure to be here, Jeffrey. Thank you.
We also have with us Ryan Henson, who's the Policy Director for CROP and for the California Wilderness Coalition. Ryan, thank you for joining us.
Thanks very much for having me.
So, Rich, let's start with you. How did CROP get started? And I'm a little surprised it actually didn't exist before now.
Frankly, so were we when we began the project. The Community Governance Partnership, which is my 501c3, and the California Wilderness Coalition have been working on this project for a couple of years. And we saw an issue among the people that we work with, not just in Northwest California, but all over the state, that was not being addressed, that had severe environmental problems, a very, very strong political angle as well. And we decided to put together a bipartisan coalition to address the problem and to try to come up with long-term solutions for it.
When you say it's bipartisan, I mean, is there any partisanship in particular about crop grows? I mean, about pot grows on public lands? It seems like there's a pretty good cross-section of people across the political spectrum there.
Yeah, it's an excellent question, and the answer is there's really not. I mean, it's the only project I've ever worked on in my professional life where there was pretty much consensus on both sides that this was a serious issue that had to be addressed, and it had to be addressed now as opposed to later.
So what do we know? Why are people still growing pot illegally on public land when they can grow it legally?
Well, for decades, the issue of DTO, drug trafficking organization, growing on federal lands has sort of flown under the public radar. And there is still a strong illicit market in California despite the legalization of the product. And CROP is the first broad-based effort to really shine a light on that seemingly intractable problem to take back our land from those DTOs.
Why would there still be an illicit market? I mean, I guess if it gets down to basic economics, is it still cheaper on the illicit market than it is on the public market?
It is. But the problem with what people buy on the illicit market is that they really don't know what they're buying. One of the things that we have discovered through our research and the research of Dr. Murad Gabriel from the Integral Ecology Resource Center, who actually pioneered much of this work, is that a lot of the same poisons that DTOs are using on public land grows are ending up in the final product. So those DTO grows are poisoning unsuspecting users, slaughtering wildlife on a landscape scale, and causing serious, serious water quality problems for local communities, especially tribes.
We did talk to Murad Gabriel, probably not in the last year or so, but about this project in the past. So Ryan Henson, expand the zone for us a little bit. Talk about the environmental impacts that we're seeing still from illegal pot grows on public lands.
Sure. There's a vast backlog of illegal grow sites that still have yet to be cleaned up. And these sites contain trash and chemicals, many of which are banned in the United States. And so in addition to new grows occurring on public lands, we have several hundred, perhaps thousands of grows that have mounds of trash and toxic materials there. And these are finding their way into wildlife. Tissue studies of wildlife are finding them in the blood and the tissues of deer and even endangered species like northern spotted owl and Pacific fisher. In fact, in the listing of the Pacific fisher, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service cited the rodenticides and other impacts of illegal pot grows as one of the factors in that listing. So in addition to that, there's water quality impacts and soil impacts, not to mention the public safety impacts of having people out in the woods armed to the teeth and with booby traps and things like that.
Do we have any idea, even a rough idea of the number of grows out there? And I mean, it can scare people into thinking they're like just armed roving bands of people with guns out there.
I think, well, the short answer to your question is we really don't know how many grows are out there. The grows exist in areas that are remote, often hard to get to. DTOs have become skilled at hiding those sites. They're a lot better at it than they used to be. So that is one of the issues, is that we simply do not know the scale of the problem, which is one of the reasons why we need more Forest Service rangers on the ground in those national forests. I mean, as an example, there were three rangers to patrol the entire 1.1 million acre Mendocino National Forest. And that's a good situation compared to some of the other ones in the state. So a lack of people on the ground has encouraged it. Geographical isolation has made it easy.
We're talking to Rich McIntyre and Ryan Henson, Director and Policy Director of Crop Cannabis Removal on Public Lands based in California. You can join us as we talk about removing illegal marijuana grows still on public land. 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. The figure you keep mentioning, or at least the presence of DTOs, drug trafficking organizations, your website says 90% of the trespass grows, and that's the general term for them, trespass grows.
Correct.
Are controlled by drug trafficking organizations versus what? A couple of guys just growing for friends?
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, historically there were trespass grows on public land back in the 60s and 70s, well before cannabis became legal. That activity ratcheted down and moved to largely to private land. And of course, our focus is strictly on federal lands, and the statistics are pretty clear that approximately 90% and perhaps more than that. Our DTO controlled grows. When we talk to law enforcement, when we talk to IERC, they rarely find anything other than that. When they go on the bus, they rarely find anything other than DTO folks, almost always armed with AK-47s, by the way, guarding those grows.
So these people from not just out of the state, but out of the country?
Correct.
Mm-hmm. And do we know anything about the people who create them? I mean, they don't how do we know what we know about them?
Ahead,
the U.S. Forest Service and the DEA and other agencies have actually done a lot of intelligence gathering on these drug trafficking organizations, and they do find that they are connected to international networks, and we're learning a lot about them. And actually, one of the things that one of our solutions to this problem is actually to do more. To invest more in the law enforcement resources, not just boots on the ground out in the woods, but also gathering intelligence on these international networks and figuring out how to best take them down.
Is there a preferred approach here? It seems like you probably have to work backwards from first eliminating the grows that are already out there and then work to prevention. Is there a prevention arm well envisioned at this point?
I think prevention is having more Forest Service rangers on the ground and spreading the word that the Crop Project is active in specific places, and we're likely to see therefore fewer grows in that region.
So does Crop then have members of law enforcement as part of its coalition?
We do. Yes, we certainly do. There are members of federal law enforcement on our advisory board. The county commissioners that are on our advisory board represent law enforcement in their districts as well. So, all of those folks are part of this coalition.
I did take a look at the National Geographic video that was linked from the Crop site. It shows Murad Gabriel again, who's a scientist from UC Davis.
UC Davis. He has his own.
The Integral Ecology Resource Center in Blue Lake.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's right. Yeah, we did. That's where we talked to him before. But he talks about the regularity of it all in that video, about poison, kill, plant, repeat. He said he doesn't want to make it seem so simple, but it really is like that. Poison, kill, plant, repeat.
It really is. On our website, cropproject.org, that's two P's, the video that Jeffrey just referenced is really worth looking at. It's a National Geographic video. It actually shows what we're talking about in real life, and it's disturbing, and it's sort of must see television. The Crop Project website also has a great deal of background information, all of which is referenced, numbers, resources, that sort of thing. So there's a lot more information there that we would encourage folks to take a look at.
So what other – we mentioned law enforcement. We've got the Community Governance Partnership, your group, Rich, Ryan Henson, California Wilderness Coalition, which I assume is a coalition of a bunch of different groups.
Yes.
So, how many different organizations altogether are enrolled in the Crop Project?
That's a very interesting question, and I'm not sure that I can.
It's growing every day.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, I don't think I can honestly put a number on it, Jeffrey. I would say the core organizations that are working hard on the project are probably, I would say, 15 to 20 right now. That's going to expand relatively quickly. This is actually the first launch. This is the first public launch of the project. We wanted to do it on our hometown regional radio station, and the project will be going statewide and national within the next 30 days.
Is there a sense that we're past the peak, that at least we're on the downward slope where there would have been fewer grows on public land anyway, and this is an effort to shove it further downhill, or did you feel like it was still staying stable, plateauing, growing, what?
Go ahead, Red.
Well, we weren't sure when we first began this effort about 2 years ago, we weren't sure what the general trend was, if it was upward, downward, or about the same. Now it seems... I'm getting the sense that it's on a general downward trend, but that isn't what motivated us. But that does seem like a great time to tackle the problem and clean up the mess.
The issue with it being – what I would say is that it's on a downward trend in certain areas. It's on a downward trend in Southern Oregon. It's on a downward trend in the Emerald Triangle, but it's exploding in the Central California forest around Fresno and around Tahoe, according to the experts that we have talked to. Most of the cannabis that is produced on public lands in California, which is between 40 and 70% of all the illicit product that's grown in California, is exported. So people are smoking cannabis from public lands in Chicago and New York and Miami and St. Louis, and they are doing it on a very, very innocent basis, not realizing that they're sucking poisons into their system. So part of the crop project, we're going to be rolling out next year a public education campaign statewide that talks about the dangers of ingesting unregulated, untested cannabis. It's really one of the big things that legalization offers is a safe product to consume.
What do we know about where people are buying the product that comes off of the illegal grows?
From what we understand from the intelligence that's been gathered, is these drug trafficking organizations have contracts to provide pot to Chicago street gangs, who then distribute it to the Midwest and East Coast.
So California is the growing place.
Yes.
It's headed for places that do not have legal marijuana.
Correct. Exactly. And that's why, though it's not at all part of crop, the fight for legalization, that's why my personal hope is that over time, national legalization will make a real dent in growing on public land.
Is that a universally held feeling within crop?
That's a universally held feeling, I think, within crop. Something I wanted to mention that Ryan talked about, even with a downward trend, there are thousands of sites that have to be restored, and the work that is involved in restoring those sites is extensive. You have to decommission them, which means ripping out piping, restoring water flows, replanting, removing the toxics, which is a huge, huge issue. So, in some ways, it continuing is less important from our perspective than cleaning up what is there right now and stopping the poisoning of wildlife and communities, which is happening broadly.
These almost sound like Superfund sites. You have to take out some of the soil.
Yeah, you could actually call them mini Superfund sites. There's not a lot of soil removal involved, but the toxics that DTOs are using for grows are so powerful. A quarter of a teaspoon of one of those ingredients will kill a 600-pound lion. And we're finding, Murad Gabriel and his group are finding quarts and gallons of this material at each site. I mean, frankly, enough to kill every endangered species in the entire forest.
Grab your headphones. We're going to have a phone call for you in a moment. We're talking to the leaders of Crop Cannabis Removal on Public Lands based in California. Rich McIntyre is the executive director. Ryan Henson, the policy director. Rich comes from the Community Governance Partnership. Ryan from the California Wilderness Coalition. You can join the conversation on the exchange, 800-838-3760, by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Here's a call from Derek and Talent. Welcome to the exchange.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. Just a... clarification, and I hope you'll correct me if I'm wrong, but when you're referring to rangers, Forest Service rangers, I assume what you're referring to is Forest Service law enforcement. The only Forest Service rangers I'm aware of are actual wilderness rangers that work in wilderness areas. Is that correct, or am I wrong about that?
I was referring to Forest Service and Bureau of Land Management law enforcement officers, which I was just colloquially calling rangers. Thank you for that.
So, Derek, is there some significance in numbers or in capabilities, authorizations, that sort of thing? Oops, he's gone. He got off the phone. All right. Thank you, Derek and Talent, for calling in. We have a couple of emails here, one of which actually came in before the show. And Farmer Steven from the North Coast says, I just wanted to put in a vote against homogeny, dependence, and control. I was born and raised in the California Redwoods, educated and currently living in the Emerald Triangle. I'm 45 and have been involved in the marijuana community since I was 15. I have grown for large clubs, been raided by the feds, grown in the backyard, and pulled off several renegade grows on public lands, in quotes. I wanted to make a couple of points that could hopefully be remembered in the conversation. Farmer Steven goes on, one, any person who believes that public lands actually belong to the public are just falling for more of the delusion. In actuality, the public is given very limited and strictly controlled access, often for a fee, to small portions of so-called public lands. Public lands are always in quotes here. I should point that out. Farmer Steven says point number two is the criminalization of growers is not a new thing, but I would like to point out that for 50 years, folks in this area have been growing on public lands, because if you're caught growing on private lands, your land could and would be taken. I know hundreds of generally law-abiding, good neighbor citizens who at some point in the past 50 years had to do a renegade grow on public lands. Farmer Steven concludes, if we really want to bring the marijuana industry out of the shadows, we need to decriminalize, remove financial and zoning barriers for growers, and stop trying to starve out and prosecute craft growers, the very ones who built the industry, which is now being taken over by corporations and finance. Allow folks to grow, market, and sell, and we wouldn't have, in quotes, illegal grows. As for public lands, I support marijuana grows over cattle and logging leases any day, although I'm not naive enough to believe that I have a say in the matter. The only real votes on how to use public land must be bought for a fee way beyond the reach of the public. That in quotes, too. That from Farmer Steven. Thoughts from you guys?
Well, I'd just like to say that our public lands are a real treasure. They are most often cheap or free. For the public to enjoy. I also grew up in the Emerald Triangle. I grew up in Mendocino County. I have a scar across my left foot from concertina wire stretched between two trees at an illegal grow on public land. And that was in the 80s, before this even exploded as a problem. So it's been a problem. I know people have been doing it, but it's just plain wrong, and it's extremely destructive. And most people, including most marijuana growers, agree with us on this point. And our public lands need, and we do need to fight to get other extractive industries off of and despoiling our public land too. This isn't just about marijuana, but this is a problem that hasn't been addressed, and we're trying to address it, and it's about time. Though I do agree with this last point that legalization would take a big bite out of this problem.
And the one thing that I would add to that is that he's obviously been there for a long time. 40 years ago, 30 years ago is a lot different than it is today. And while I, you know, I have a lot of friends in the cannabis culture in the Emerald Triangle, I respect what they do. But all of the folks that I know have moved to private land and are going through a legalization process. I sympathize with the hoops that have been created for them. I think it should be more streamlined, and I think that part of his statement is something that we can completely agree with.
Richard McIntyre and Ryan Henson are here from Crop, cannabis removal on public lands in California. Kate from Ashland writes in, I'm curious about whether the Crop group is using drones with heat sensing technology to identify these grows in wilderness areas. The city of Ashland is using drones to identify people camping in our watershed. Use by initiatives like Crop seem perhaps more appropriate to this technology. That from Kate in Ashland.
We actually need a lot more research into remote detection of these grows. And one of the things people talk about a lot are drones, but I have yet to hear of them actually being used extensively. In fact, just this morning on National Public Radio, I heard about them being used for fire detection for the first time as an experiment. So if they haven't been used for that yet, they haven't been used for marijuana.
I heard the same piece about the fire lookouts. So the first of your goals at Crop is to increase federal and state resources to crack down on the trespass grows. Has there been a consistent source of funding to address them from either level?
Well, that's been part of the problem. There really hasn't. It's been very, very piecemeal, a grant here, a grant there. There's never been a concerted push to address this issue on a comprehensive basis and to address it long term to actually solve the problem.
Yeah, the funding has been extremely spotty, and Dr. Gabriel estimates that, you know, sustained funding over a decade, and that's, you know, at a fairly modest level, could pretty much deal with the backlog of grow sites. And so our goal is to push every year for appropriations at the state and federal levels. We haven't We haven't decided on the amounts yet, but you know, we do think that significant increases in federal law enforcement and significant increases in the money available for cleanup is really important. And by the way, when these sites are cleaned up, Dr. Gabriel has found something like an 80% plus rate of them not being reused.
90, actually.
90, mm-hmm. actually, okay, by the DTO. So that's very important. I guess it puts them on the map once they've been cleaned up and they don't want to go back.
Oh, that makes sense, sure. So the second goal works with the first, and that is to keep the funding local. Keep it local in what sense?
So the revenues that are going to there's going to be a lot of money that's going to be spent on this project. We're not interested. The CROP project is not interested in creating a cannabis equivalent of a corporate waste management operation. There are local organizations like IERC, tribes, resource conservation districts that can undergo further training that are the people that we feel should help decommission and reclaim those sites. A, it's in their backyard. B, it keeps the money local. And C, it really ties the folks there even more closely to the land than they are now.
So the third goal then, in the minute we have left, is a statewide public education campaign. I mean, directed where? What's the thing you most want people to know to be able to help CROP do what it set out to do, which is to remove cannabis from public lands?
Well, obviously, we need money. So you go to our website, cropproject.org. There is a donation button there. What we're going to need is people to write their state and federal officials, raise the issue, tell them that when legislation is raised, we need their votes on this issue. Politicians respond to constituent pressure, and constituent pressure needs to be brought on this issue. We're fortunate in that Congressman Jared Huffman is going to is helping champion this project. We have broad support in the Assembly and the State Senate in California. So we're confident that political coalition will see it through.
CROPproject.org, two P's, as you pointed out earlier. Mm-hmm. Rich McIntyre is the director of the CROP Project. Ryan Henson, the policy director. CROP stands for Cannabis Removal on Public Lands. You'll be hearing a lot more about this in the next couple of years. Thank you both for joining us and making the journey to Ashland to talk about it.
Great pleasure.
Thank you. That'll do it.